It is Saturday, April 21st, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, our Week in Geek News segment, a discussion about assistive technology and your questions and comments of technology.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we have John Bjornstein, the creator of the Sue Center, an assistive communication environment which can be used solely by head movement. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join a conversation. You can ask us anything. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can contact us right now. Just go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam, Slacker Geek and student. Morning, Miles.
Good morning.
And Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA. Morning, Sean.
Good morning.
I'm still not used to your facial hair. You look great. Look young. It's freaking me out, though. So before we get our discussion about assistive technologies, let's do some geek news. I'd like to start with you, Sean, because of your beautiful facial hair.
Or lack of. Vista...
The operating system.
Up to this point, if you wanted to buy a new computer, you pretty much had to go with Vista, because all the major resellers and system builders are pretty much telling you, you got to have Vista. You don't want XP.
I've run into people who
trust us, you don't want XP. But we want XP.
I ran into somebody this morning that had that exact problem. They bought a new computer, they got Vista, they had problems with some of their old peripheral stuff, couldn't get it to work. They call up Dell, actually, and go through this whole process on the phone saying, I want just XP. Can't you give it to me? Dell's like, sorry, hands are tied. Can't do it. We can sell it to you for $200.
Yeah.
I'm a new customer. Give me what I want.
Yeah, the same thing happened to me. I had a really nice flatbed scanner that I was using with Windows 98.
Uh-huh.
And when I installed XP,
not so much.
Couldn't use it anymore. So I sympathize. Well, so do 11,000 other people who voted in response to... there's suggestions that Dell's been looking for. They've been, I guess, polling people, finding out,
So Dell heard
things
some complaints
they can change.
And decided to look into
11,000 people said, we would like XP back. Don't get rid of it so quickly.
Wow.
And they are going to indeed start offering it again.
Now, it sounds to me from people that have had trouble with getting Windows XP from Dell with new computers, it sounds to me that Dell had a relationship with Microsoft that was a promise that only home users would definitely get Vista, because it was a clear understanding that businesses could still get XP from Dell. So it wasn't like Dell wasn't stocking it or Dell didn't have the support services for it.
Yeah, Dell can't tell businesses what to do. There's
right.
Just no way.
Because they're too strong. So the individuals were getting kind of pushed around. 11,000 people complained and Dell's changing their policy?
Yes.
So does that mean that if you bought a computer with Vista on it and you want to revert I wouldn't say that. Okay.
I'd be very surprised if they let you go back and grab another version of the operating system.
More likely.
They've already sold you one.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. All right. Well, thank you very much for that story. It's interesting, though, then Vista
it's interesting with Microsoft
backwards, I guess.
So Microsoft said in response to this.
Yeah.
They said it's a small minority of customers who had a very specific request.
Really? 11,000 people? Are you using Vista as your primary operating system?
Not as my primary, but I do use Vista.
Miles, are you using Vista?
No, I have never used Vista, as a matter of fact.
All right. Well, our guest today is using Vista, so we'll talk a little bit about that when we talk with him. But first, let's do some more news. Miles?
In operating system news, The Ubuntu Linux distribution has been released.
This is a free operating system.
This is a free operating system, and in fact, it has made tremendous strides.
What kind of improvements?
Wireless is very easy. I actually did the install on my computer the other day, and installation is extremely easy. Wireless networks are not a problem to find, and it also adds the feature that I was most interested in, which is for our own mail server or web server,
yeah,
which was virtualization. Comes out of the box, ready to handle that.
Hardware-level virtualization, too.
Hardware-level virtualization.
Does that mean that the stuff is built into the operating system, or is it still an add-on thing that you'd want to add in?
It's built into the kernel.
Okay, the hardware virtualization is built into the kernel.
The utilities for using it come as an extra package. I mean, extra package, not in that you have to buy it, but it's an extra download.
Right. Now, the general idea with virtualization, just to explain, is that you have an operating system and you can run multiple operating systems inside it. And this is very important when you're doing a Linux environment because, of course, if you're a Photoshop user, for example, you have to use Macintosh or Windows to run Photoshop. They don't have a Linux version.
Well, you can use Wine.
Yeah. I wouldn't try to do that with Photoshop. But in any case, if you don't want to do Wine, you could run another copy of Windows inside your Linux environment. This is on a Macintosh environment. There's an application called Parallels, which got a lot of play, and that's basically virtualization. Macintosh has had it for a long time because they need to be able to support Windows users, Windows applications, and so they have a thing called, Mac Windows? Can't even call the application. The
version. What, the one back in the day, Soft Windows?
What's that now? Soft Windows? No, it's a Macintosh. And it's a Windows product, runs on a Mac, and allows you to run virtual Windows. Huh. Clearly, a Windows virtualization. So virtualization is getting a little more popular, and it makes sense in a lot of geeky ways.
But it also makes sense from a security standpoint. And that's how we're using it on our server, is that you have one main host operating system and then multiple virtual servers. And while it will act like multiple servers, if one gets hacked into, for example, you only have the security required to get that running. Mm-hmm. And so all they have control over is that virtual machine. They can't infect the entire site or the entire
service. If you're curious about this, you can go to geekspeak.org, click on the blog, and I wrote a post about our server and how we use virtualization. It's not very good, but you're welcome to read it and learn a little bit about that. Thank you very much.
It's a good article. It's just a little geeky.
Thank you very much for this. And actually, this new Ubuntu, I'm planning on installing on one of my Windows machines and run and install Windows' virtualization to run the things I need to run in Windows and play with it as my primary OS. So we'll see how that goes. I'll report on it. One more news story, or maybe a couple more.
Actually, let's go with Miles. He's got some good ones.
Also, in terms of new software, the new version of Mozilla Thunderbird.
Yeah, that's what I really wanted to talk about. I didn't know about this till this morning. I saw the headline. But Thunderbird 2.0.
Mm-hmm. Thunderbird 2.0, which one of the...
This is an email client made by Mozilla.
It's an email client that many of us have used. I don't know if our guest has, but...
It's made by Mozilla,
right,
who's the maker of Firefox.
Right, same folks who make Firefox. And the new features that have been added are tagging. For example, those who have used Gmail would be familiar with this, that you're able to tag email rather than just put it into a folder.
Yeah.
You're able to do this with all email. In addition to that, speaking of Gmail, is Thunderbird allows you to use your Gmail account as a mail source. So you're using the Thunderbird client, but the back end, instead of being an IMAP server or a POP server, is Gmail.
Okay, that's really nice.
And becomes seamless.
Nice. I like that idea because, of course, I use my Gmail account, but I always forget to log in. So to have one client with just an added in, you know, account, which is my Gmail account, I like that idea. Tagging support and knowing how good Thunderbird is, I might try Thunderbird as my primary. Now I use Apple Mail, but I might try.
What about tabs? How would that work? So if you did, I know Yahoo Mail, when you do a search, each instance becomes its own tag or its own tab, which is kind of interesting. Is Thunderbird doing the same type of thing, or is a tab another email?
Has it been released?
Yes,
is there
it
any
has
data,
been released.
Any feedback on that?
I haven't heard anything.
See, this is one of those things where, okay, new version of an application, you want to try it out. I don't like messing with my email very much. So it's a little scary to do.
I'm going to install it.
You're going to install it?
Yeah, I'm going to jump in and install
Sean
it. So we'll talk about it next week.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you. One more news story? We're going to keep going?
Sure.
Okay. Miles, I know you had a lot, and you sounded pretty interesting. Yeah. Normally in the morning, I'm like, okay, Miles, yeah, whatever. Today I was actually interested in what you had to say.
I see how it is.
This week for me was getting all my work done so I could take vacation next week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're going to
Hawaii,
right?
So I had no time to look at news this whole past week, so I really don't know what went on.
All right.
Yeah.
One particular problem that Hollywood is having a problem with, or one particular problem, yeah, is that...
Good said.
Good said. Is that they're having trouble archiving their old materials. Hollywood has been moving.
I have that problem.
Yeah, Hollywood has been moving to more digital formats. A lot of movies are being made in purely digital form. The cameras are digital. The media is digital. Even the delivery system to theaters is becoming digital. But whereas in the past, when you had film, film lasts a very long time, as long as you keep it in reasonable temperatures and
right.
without moisture.
In the dark, dry.
Right. But it'll last a long time. But we don't have the same thing with regard to digital materials, and there's a huge amount of data to be saved. So they're running into the same backup problems that a lot of us are, but to a much larger extent, especially because a lot of these works are still under copyright, which means that they may disappear before the copyright expires and never fall into the public domain.
Well, they probably will disappear before. I mean, the copyright's, what, 95 years, maybe it's like that?
Depends on whether it's a work for
hire
or not.
So who is complaining about this specifically?
No, it's just it's an overall problem with regard to Hollywood, what they're finding.
All right.
And, of course, CDs and DVDs have their lifespan, too.
They do. And, you know, if you have something really important on a CD or DVD and you haven't looked at it in a year, look at it and make a copy of it because they do wear out.
I would say more than a year. I mean, these things are supposed to last 8 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm. You spend 50 cents on it. I don't know.
Now imagine if everyone just copied the movies, copied the digital form and downloaded it.
It'd be impossible to get let go of it, huh?
Well, somebody would have a copy of it. They'd make backups or transfer to another computer. That's maybe the way to save it, is that you don't have a single piece of media that's saving it. It's a collective save. If it's important to people, they will keep it around.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The Geeks, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland. Thank you very much. Today on Geek Speak, we have John Bjornstein, the creator of the Sioux Center, an assistive communication environment which can be used solely by head movement. The system enables people with very limited movement the ability to read books and receive email and more. John has been working on this software for the past 7 years. John Bjornstein, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you.
Oh, well, let me turn the mic up. I should probably turn the mic up. Go ahead. Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for being here. Now, you've been on Geeks. You've returned to GeekSpeak. You've been on before. We had a Prius show years ago, and you'd gotten a community of people trying to bring more Prius awareness. Right. And I got to say, there's a lot more Prius on the road, so to some degree, you succeeded.
Well, thank you.
Miles and I both own a Prius.
That's right. And I think at the time, Miles owned one, but Sean hadn't gotten one yet.
Yeah,
so.
I got it.
So you've had winners in the room.
All right.
But you also, another passion of yours is to enable people that have low mobility to use computers.
Right.
And one thing that caught me earlier, we were talking about computer use, and like, well, is there a lot of people that are really into computers that have limited mobility? And you said it's not about being into computers, it's about the communication services that a computer affords you.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about what the problem you ran into 7 years ago. Or actually, I guess it was longer than that.
Yeah. In 1986, I met a woman who was a mute quadriplegic, terrifically handicapped. She couldn't do much of anything. But she did have a specialized computer from Prentke Romek. It was a company that makes specialized computers. And it enabled her to point a light pen at a rectangular array of LEDs and choose one of them just by pointing at it and dwelling on it.
And the light pen was attached to her...
On her glasses.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So she was able to move using this grid. So was there a computer and a grid?
It was just the computer. It was a very specialized device, rather expensive. And she was able to communicate with that by choosing letters and words and things like this. And over the years, I helped her with it, configuring it and maintaining it. But then it eventually started to wither and die. And the replacement for it was very expensive and didn't quite suit her.
Mm-hmm.
So as a software engineer, I decided to try something on my own. And it was a lot of fun.
And that's a really interesting thing, is that the technology that was there, 87 technology, was functional for her, but slowly it degraded, as in it couldn't, you know, you couldn't really upgrade it, you couldn't really keep it going, and the technology kind of died. That happens with technology. It's a pretty common thing.
It certainly does.
And everybody's experience right now, the whole Vista Windows XP thing, is an example of that to some degree. You know, if you want the newer stuff, you have to get the newer thing. So the issue, of course, with this is that there's not a large consumer base that needs extremely low mobility computing features.
No, it's very small.
And so, of course, the cost is going to be really high. And you might be able to deal with that by getting grants or donations, but that, of course, is a lot of money management to get these technologies. So instead, you start building something. What do you use? What are the tools you used?
I use Perl.
An open source scripting environment.
Mm-hmm. Perl with the graphical library TK.
Mm-hmm. Which is another open source.
Those are my bag.
Yeah.
You know, that's my bag.
I think that's says a lot about computer development. You know, that of course, I mean, from a technical perspective, Perl and TK, old school. You know, I mean, it's like everybody's using the newer stuff, the newer, fancier stuff. But you had that skill set and you attacked it with it. So we just tried it in the other room. The first things that's very difficult to do is to take someone's just their head movement and make it something that can be used in a computer.
Right.
So it used to be a light pen with LED sensors and such. Mm-hmm. What is it now?
There's a special device called a Smart Nav, which works very well. It's a
That's a trademark name, right? That's one company's.
It's a little camera that sits on top of your monitor or your laptop screen, and it's a infrared parallax device, and it senses a reflective dot on your forehead,
okay,
or on the brim of a hat, and as you move your head or the brim of the hat as long as you move your head, this device will track it, and it'll move the cursor.
So it looks like the mouse cursor moving around the screen. I was really impressed this morning. We had a little trouble under the skylights in the Troxel Studios. Mm-hmm. It was too bright, so we had to move it to a slightly darker place.
Right.
But then it just worked just like a mouse, moving a mouse around the screen.
Yeah, it's very good. It costs $99 is all.
Yeah, it's good. Now, you actually, I looked online, the retail price a little higher, but you buy them at below retail, sell them at basically cost to help people out with this.
Right.
The information about, more information about this can be found at geekspeak.org. There's a link over to the Sioux Center, which is siouxcenter.org, actually.
Right.
And you can find out about the technology to some degree and links over. And that's great that you provide the service of selling to people that are going to use the software.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I noticed when I took a look at this Smart Nav company, because it's very interesting, the idea that you don't have to touch anything with your hands. People want to use it in general. And what I noticed is that their entire website is targeted for gamers, targeted for virtual cockpits mostly. The idea is that you have your joysticks and you're doing a sim and you want to be able to have your head move your view around.
Right.
And so these things have dropped in price, I'm assuming, because of that.
I presume so.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing. It's a relatively common a common thing in technology where you need to have a mass market for a certain technology to drop the price low enough.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why the assistive technology stuff to some degree is very expensive. There isn't a large market.
Exactly.
There was a great example of this with, what's that little personal driving device called? You stand on, you push forward, lean forward.
The Segway.
The Segway. So the inventor of the Segway, what he invented before the Segway was a standing wheelchair. And I don't know if any of you have seen the standing wheelchair. Have you guys seen this?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's you strap into the wheelchair, and the wheelchair is able to go upstairs, and it has four wheels, and it can actually stand at a normal human standing height, like 5 feet or so.
Yeah.
So the person, though they're sitting in it, it's kind of like a robotic standing. Extremely expensive.
Yeah, but each of the pair of wheels is on its own axis that can spin as well.
Right, right, exactly. And so the technology for it was extremely expensive. And I remember him saying, you know, I'm working on a product that's going to be a mass market product to try to subsidize so these motors drop in cost, and that's the Segway. So the idea that if you get something mass market, the same technologies used, you can then drop all the price on the motors. So this is another example. The gaming industry, if you will, is dropping the price of these navigation devices.
Right.
So in any case, it just looks like a camera, but it's not really a camera. It's just basically some sensors for to detect infrared.
Right.
And then on the brim or on your forehead, you put this little reflective material. The same type of reflective material. I think it's called 100% or 100 angle reflective. There's a great little term for it. But basically, it's a piece of reflection material that reflects at any angle you shine light at it. And that's similar to the reflectors that you see in the roads and such. Okay, so then you got a device that allows you to move the cursor around the screen.
Right.
Big part of it.
Right.
But just having a cursor, it's a little difficult to, say, send an email. So how do you achieve that?
Well, the first thing to note is you don't have to click the mouse. You just have to move it.
Okay. Well, how do you then pick something? I'm used to clicking, so.
Right. Most people are used to clicking. The way you do it is it's called dwell clicking. So basically you sort of move the cursor across the screen and you approach an area that you want to choose. If you dwell within that area a certain amount of time, then it's chosen.
Cool.
So you effectively have
click has to do with duration on that spot.
Right.
Okay.
And so that was the So I had to work within that limitation.
Yeah, yeah.
To develop some software to help them communicate, to help them speak, and
yeah. The other thing that was interesting to me is when you first had talked to me about this at a meeting a while ago, I was like, well, what about voice commands? I mean, don't people that are quadriplegic use voice commands?
Voice recognition.
Mm-hmm. Of course, your first. I just heard that Sue, the person that you first designed this for,
right.
was mute.
Right.
So that doesn't, voice commands don't work so well with that.
Not so good.
Yeah.
And it's problematic with other people as well.
Demos, you have these great videos on your website that that shows people using the technology.
Right.
And it's true, the way they're speaking, it's clearly that it's kind of quiet. And sometimes it takes a while to say something. And I could see that would be very frustrating to try to tell a computer what to do. I already have trouble telling computers what to do with voices.
It doesn't always work, especially for people with voices that are either frail or weak or, you know, it's not there yet.
Yeah. No. Now, if I used Word with even just a mouse with no clicking capabilities, it would not work. I mean, there's no keypad, for example, built in. So you had to build a keypad. But what are the things that you have to build in this dwelling pointer environment?
Well, as usual, it started simple and then evolved. The first steps were to create an on-screen keyboard so people could choose letters and, in some sort of configuration, so it was fairly easy for them to choose the letters.
Did you pick QWE?
QWERTY?
QWERTY, yeah.
No, I chose an arrangement where the space was in the middle, and around the space were the E, the L, the S, the R.
The commoner words.
More commonly used letters in English.
And when you say around the space, you mean the closest thing to the space, the least amount of travel was the most common letters.
Right.
Okay, so I want to send an email to Sean about something.
Okay.
So spelling out Sean doesn't take that long. It is S-E-A-N, by the way.
Right.
And but let's say I want to talk about meeting at a park or I use some long word, like entertainment.
Right.
That's going to take a while to spell it. So is there help?
So you type the E and then the N, and then on another area of the screen, it fills with words that begin with E-N. And then you can choose from there.
Or you can get more specific.
Or you can keep narrowing the search.
It's like typing on a smartphone.
It is. Mm-hmm. I guess when you demoed it earlier to us, I really felt like a smartphone kind of environment. And that, smartphones are limited in choice as well.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since the keys are so small.
Yeah.
And you got to really hit them with your fingertip.
I need something bigger anyway, like I need a big screen. Yeah.
And then there's other things as well. There's word prediction. So I remember what you said before. And then offer it as a possibility what you might want to say.
You gave us an example of, spelled GeekSpeak, of course, and you spelled geek, and it didn't come in predictive, so you're like, oh, geek isn't in the dictionary, which kind of makes sense. You're probably using a dictionary that was prior to the term being widely acceptable. The original definition of geek actually is someone at a circus performer who bites the heads off chickens. We aren't, by the way.
Live chickens.
Live chickens. Yeah. Thanks, that's wonderful.
Whoa.
But geeks now are us. We won't define it. So you added the word. That was easy to do. You spelled the word once, and then you pushed command add. This is all with head gestures. And then you wrote speak and sent it. And then you did it again. When you wrote geek, once you chose geek, speak showed up right there because it was common to have in your database.
Right.
And that's word prediction.
That's word prediction. There's word completion and then word prediction. And they both speed the process of data entry.
You also have a whole list of all short words that you might use a lot just there.
Right.
And then you also have added a whole bunch of other features. We're going to talk a little bit about that more. We're going to continue this conversation. Mm-hmm. We're also going to take people's calls on GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Aloha Airlines, offering daily nonstop service to Honolulu, Maui, and Kona from Oakland International Airport. Also, flexible inter-island connections throughout the islands. Reservations and information are at AlohaAirlines.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak. We're now taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. The numbers are 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Make sure to stay tuned after GeekSpeak at 11 o'clock for Castle Cottage. Sean.
It's pretty funny because I'm flying Aloha next week.
I know. The first time we ever have Aloha on and you're actually going to be on Aloha next week. Is that like something you set up? You go to the airport and you're like, I need flights. And by the way, I do a radio show.
Yeah, really?
And they said a radio show.
What? No online internet access?
That's funny because that's how Santa Cruz Electronics happened. You know, Miles used to work for Santa Cruz Electronics. We'd go visit. Wow, we're doing a gig. Let's have you on. And then he's like, oh, I can actually, donate money to KUSP. And they did. So
You didn't do that, though, for Aloha Island.
Well, with Seagate, you know, we started using their drives.
We did.
Jumped on board. Maybe we should just start talking to the big company.
We should talk to money, people with money.
we could syndicate. Wouldn't that be fun?
Take kickbacks.
KUSP sponsors Pastors of Plenty, A History of California's Farm Workers. This radio documentary is produced by KUSP's own Rachel Goodman. The premiere of this documentary, with a slideshow by Sandy Lydon, with special guest, will take place Sunday, April 22nd at 7 p.m. at the Brio College Watsonville Center on Union Street in Watsonville. Reservations are recommended, and for more information on tickets, please call 479-6331. That's 479-6331.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxel. That was Sean Cleveland. We also have Geek Miles Elam. We're talking to John Bjornstein about his application, the Sioux Center, which helps people with limited mobility use communications means available to them via computer. You can join the conversation right now. Rick Philman's waiting by to take your calls and pipe them on air. The phone numbers, and you can ask us anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800. That's 476-2800. Or you can call us toll-free anywhere in California, 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. Of course, you can send us email if you don't want to get online or get on air. You do that by going to geekspeak.org, where you can also learn a bit more about the Sioux Center and see a wonderful video demonstration of it. So if you're interested in how this software works, how people use it, go to geekspeak.org and click on today's show. There's a link over to the Sioux Center. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. We're taking your calls. Go ahead and give us a call. We'll take anything you'd like. 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. John, while we wait for calls, I want to be a little more clear. Of course, typing is a big part of sending email. I'm sure you also have an address book built into the system. Mm-hmm. But there's other features that you do which have really come about because you've had users request them from you. Right. And one of them was reading books, specifically. Right. So where are you getting the books? Are you typing books in? Or
No. Of course not. There's a there's all kinds of books available in the public domain, and at bookshare.org, and at there's also you can go to bookshare.org and download all the full text of these public domain books.
Like Alice in Wonderland was one of them. Mm-hmm. That's a public domain book, and you get a full copy of it. And so instead of publishing them into a paper or anything, you're just displaying them in an interface, which is even easy to navigate through head gestures.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And one of the things that got me on this when you loaded up the book, I was like, okay, that's cool. I mean, that's, you know, from computer use perspective, that's not a big deal. But actually, if you do not have hand movement, reading a book is very hard. I mean,
it sure is.
You can't hold a book. So I'm assuming that there's more traditional technology that you put a book into a machine and it will actually turn pages for you.
Right,
there's equipment like that. Of course, that's expensive and fills up space. And
it doesn't always work very well either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this now instead, the people that are maybe our caregivers would get more books, load them into the system. The user would be able to, whenever they want, open up their library of books, find which one they want to read, add bookmarks, and do it without help from anybody else, which is, I bet, a big part
That's the main thing.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was great was your email interface and kind of your story. Tell me about building out email in the system.
Sure. Well, of course, one wants to send and receive email, right?
I know I do.
It's the main means of communication. So I built an address book, so you can put people's addresses in it, and then you choose the command email. You can choose from the address book. Then you can type your letter and send it off. And then receiving email, there's another full screen interface for that. And so it talks POP3 and IMAP to any server.
Good.
So it's a, and then it's so it, you receive the emails, and I just, it's a pure text interface, right?
So what do you do with like rich, you know, HTML emails? How do you handle that?
I parse it and extract the text.
Good. I wish I had a service like that. Honestly, it's frustrating to get all these colored emails. You know, I just want the data. Okay, so you pull the data out and you make it available in large enough typeface to read from a distance.
Right.
What about an attached image or something?
Right. So as soon as people started using this, of course, their friends sent them pictures. And you want to see your pictures, right?
Right.
To stay in touch with your family. So I said, okay. So I pulled out the picture and made a mechanism for displaying the picture and showing slideshows et cetera, et cetera. It's like I'm reinventing all these wheels, you know?
Yeah, that's one of the things that I kind of got from this application because, of course, right. then later, pictures got bigger and bigger, and then you had to resize the image. Resize there's a lot of, you know, computers are hard. They don't do what you want until you tell them.
Exactly.
So you're a programmer, you're telling them what to do, right. and you're writing this entire new environment. What about the idea of a person, you know, you're seeing your friend. What about web access? Did you give mm-hmm. you start giving web access to people, or how do you handle that? Because, of course, if you visited with just the ability to point even geekspeak.org, it's right. going to be pretty hard to do anything.
Right, right. Of course, there's a humongous amount of information on the web that people want access to. But it's hard for them to use a web browser. You have to understand that these people are severely handicapped. They can't do much of anything. They don't have their hands,
right.
specifically.
Yes.
Hands are so important.
Yeah.
So important.
I use them every day.
To express ourselves
sure.
in all sorts of ways. So they can't use a web browser. So what I did was I essentially went to the website that they requested. I extracted... Actually, I used the links text browser.
Mm-hmm.
Familiar with that?
Yeah, sure. It's a text-only browser. Yeah. I use it in server environments to test connections and stuff. And
right.
Links, L-Y-N-X, or links, L-I-N-K-S?
L-Y-N-X.
Are they okay. really different, Miles?
Yes, they're two different code bases.
Why? Hmm. Which one's good?
Well, Lynx was originally made as being a text-only web browser. It's very simple to do. Lynx, L-I-N-K-S, was made to be as close to formatting on a website as possible in a text-only interface. So it ends up trying to do tables and actually does very well.
Oh, really? Which one do you use, Miles?
When I'm on a text link, text-only link, Lynx, L-I-N-K-S.
L-I?
Yeah.
Okay. And you use L-Y-N-K-S?
Perhaps I should use L-I-N-X.
We'll see. Yeah. Okay, so you use this thing that at least you didn't have to rebuild that. Because, of course, right. even a web browser is a bit of work.
It's more than a bit of work. Yeah. That's a lot of work. Yeah.
7 years of work here.
to make a web browser.
Sure,
yeah.
I mean, I also get from your intonation that this is a lot of work in general, even using a web browser that's already been built in text.
Yeah.
You're doing a lot to make it work in an environment for people that can only move their head.
Right. So I took the output of links, you can say dash dump,
uh-huh.
and put it into a text file. I load that text file, and then I look for links, L-I-N-K-S. Look for those.
tags.
And I make those a place that you can dwell and to take an action.
So you kind of are building your own
I extract the pictures,
mm-hmm.
so I can display the pictures. The formatting isn't always the same.
Right.
But you can see pictures, you can click on links.
Yeah. And then you also have service of using web services, building your own,
right.
to request something to be sent to you. So like, I want a picture of the Grand Canyon and
right.
presto,
right.
you get a Grand Canyon right. in your email. So
right.
a lot of features. I'm going to go ahead and start taking calls at this point because we do have some people.
Sure.
If you'd like to call in with questions, we're going to give priority to people that ask questions about assistive technologies and the Sioux Center software. So if you'd like to call up, we'll move you to the top of the queue if you're asking a question like that. And we're going to start taking people from Aptos. Elizabeth, welcome to GeekSpeak. Oh, well, we don't have Elizabeth on that line. Let's go ahead and go to Capitola. Sal, welcome to GeekSpeak. Hello, Sal. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. A couple weeks ago, I'm sorry, this isn't about your guest.
No, it's okay. It's about HD, so go on.
A couple weeks ago, you had a caller right at the very end and was kind of rushed. He said he was watching high-definition television on his computer, and there were feeds from a number of sources, including KQED, and he said there were three different devices you could buy for about $100. And
he said that like three times at the end. It's only $100. You get HD on your computer. I remember this very clearly.
Yeah, so
what's the product, right?
I actually sent you guys an email. But
I remember this.
So I'd like to know how to get that stuff.
I believe the reason we didn't respond to your email is we don't know. Does anyone know a good HD-compatible tuner for their computer? Because that's what we're looking for.
I'll have to listen to the show again to see.
Well, he didn't ever say the name.
Oh, he just wanted. Okay.
He just mentioned that it's great. So let's do this. If you do know of a product that allows HD reception on a computer, a $100 product is what we hear. Somebody wants to do a Google search for us now.
You know what? I work with guys who do this for a living. I just need to walk down and ask
them.
What
does NVIDIA have one of these tuners? Do they have like the all-in-wonder? Is that? No,
No, it's a dual TV. They do have a TV card, but it doesn't support HD.
See, that's the thing that I never really understood.
Well, and a related question is, you know, how do you even get the feed or get the download?
So you can get it over the air.
Yeah, so the general idea would be you take this card, you install it in your computer, Windows probably only.
But
and then
you're still getting TV in your normal way of getting TV?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay.
So you still have to get a large antenna on your house or cable service that has HD in it.
So Alex sent a link to Nextag, comparison shopping, and there you can get AverMedia. They have one. ATI has an HD TV tuner card. Macro Image. There's a bunch of different companies.
Yeah, but you still have to buy the program.
Yeah. No. You can receive HD.
That's
over
the thing.
Air.
One of the things we heard from last week, 2 weeks ago when we talked about this, is that in the Central Coast, California, there's quite a bit of HD content being broadcast.
Sure, yeah.
3 or 4 channels. And KQED does it, which is an amazing public
A lot of people are building
broadcast locally that you can receive in Santa Cruz?
That's what I hear, but I haven't tried it.
KQED bought a station in Monterey, and they are now broadcasting HDTV here that you can get in Santa Cruz.
Wow, it'd be great to know what channel that is.
Yeah, I get it on cable. I was watching it the other night. The air.
You know what we have to do? We have to have an HD show. Yeah. There's a lot of questions about it. So, Sean, I know you really like this topic. Do you want to try to find a guest that really knows a lot about HD?
Yeah, I can.
There's tons of them, right? So we just need to find
someone. I know a great guy.
We're going to do this for you, Sal, but yes, it's true that you do have to get an antenna and a card for your computer. Thank you so much for calling in and getting us to talk about that.
I think the card comes with the antenna. I don't think you
I think
need
you
to
might be
that.
Right. Yeah, it's true. All right, we're going to get some of those links on geekspeak.org about HD and some of the suggestions that Alex is offering to us. We're going to go ahead and go to Big Sir. And what's your name? Tori?
Yes.
Tori, hi. What's your question today from Big Sir?
Thank you for calling and taking my call. It's a little off your excellent topic, but in some ways it's similar. I probably have the slowest internet connection in the state. It comes in at a real 28K, and my wife and I share that over a wireless connection.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it often takes a long time to download things, and there's no near-term hope of DSL or any other solution other than a satellite, which I don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a three-part question. One, I open up a couple of news sites in the morning, then I go make breakfast, and then I come back, and they're all ready for me. But these sites are now starting to recycle automatically. Or they've been doing that for a while.
Sure.
So I get the New York Times and Al Jazeera and whatever else recycling every few minutes, which messes up my connection. Is there any way I can turn that off?
It's probably done with JavaScript if it's that duration.
Okay.
Use Firefox and get the add-on called NoScript.
Oh, okay.
And then you can... They won't run unless you tell them they can run.
You actually, does that make it easier to turn them on and off?
I love no scripts. You know, AdBlocker Plus?
Uh-huh.
Get AdBlocker Plus and subscribe to their U.S. feed, and you won't have to worry about ads, and those take time to download.
Okay.
And then no scripts will stop the scripts from loading.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, great solution.
The one thing to add to this is that, and I think Miles is going to raise it, so I'll let you raise it, Miles. Is this going to work all the time?
Well... One thing our guest was bringing up is that you could always turn off JavaScript support altogether.
Right.
The advantage that NoScript has is that you're doing it on a site-by-site basis, so you can have some sites running scripting.
You'll be surprised. You'll go to a site that wants to launch 5 different scripts, and one of them may be an ad service, one of them may be Google Analytics.
Yeah.
You know, just all these things you don't need.
Right.
And in fact, GeekSpeak, we do scripts on our page because of Google Analytics, because I wanted to try it out. So scripts are happening even though it gives the user no benefit.
Okay, so that's news script?
No scripts.
No scripts.
Yeah.
Okay.
No script. You know what? Install Firefox and then go to Tools and click on Add-ons.
Okay.
And that will take you to a little box that will pop up. There you click on the link that says Get Extensions.
Yes.
And then look, you'll see it right on the front page in the most popular section.
Yes.
You'll see AdBlocker Plus and
The one thing I want to say is that it's possible that these sites are not using JavaScript to refresh their page every minute. Because there's one command that you can do in HTML. It's a meta tag that says reload page, and it's possible they're doing it that way.
Uh-huh.
I have a tendency to believe they probably are doing it with script control.
Okay.
So give it a shot and let us know if it fails, because I'd love to know. But I can actually take a look at the site. That's the solution for you.
Okay, excellent. And the second part of the question is, I like to go on CNET and listen to press conferences and other things, and they work just fine at about 18K, but my computer keeps on resetting them to, I think I'm in Real Player, and it keeps on resetting them to 34K.
Yeah. What you could do, if you open up Real, you can actually modify what your connection speed is.
I've modified that to the slowest one that they have.
And they still, and is that 34?
It's actually 28, but they still keep on trying to make it happen at 34. Or the program
it's
keeps on doing
software
it.
Trying to be smart, and it's not.
I'm
going to
try
that,
Real Alternative.
Real Alternative, that's the application name?
Okay.
Yeah. And that's an alternative player that plays Real files, yeah.
And it really is a good alternative.
Except you don't have all of the, it's not as invasive as Real Player is.
Tori, thank you so much for the call.
And this works on a Mac?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Okay, and one final part to this. It seems like my computer is often doing things over the internet in the background without my permission.
Oh, yeah.
How can I stop that?
You can get a firewall. But I don't think I'm going to get into the details of this. I want to go ahead and take another call.
Okay.
Thank you, Troy, so much for the call.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Trox. The Geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland and Miles Elam. We're talking to John Bjornstein about Sue Center. And to be clear, that's SUECenter.org, a communication environment where you only need to use your head gestures. It's for people that have limited mobility, and he's been developing it for 7 years. And you're welcome to call us up with questions. If you do call up with questions about Sue Center or assistive technology, we'll put you to the front of the queue. The phone numbers are, but please do call with anything else. We have nobody calling in right now about Sue Center, so please stay on if you are with us for other questions. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Let's see, this is a little bit of adaptive technology. From Aptos, Arch?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi. What's your question today?
Well, I've got a compact Presario desktop PC. It's running Windows XP Service Pack 2. And very simple keyboard. It's not your typical multimedia keyboard with all of the gadget buttons on it. But it does have a volume up and a volume down button on the keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
When I push either of those keys, the word volume in green letters appears on my monitor.
Uh-huh.
With bars indicating what the volume level is.
Perfect.
But it does not adjust up or down.
Is this button on the monitor or the keyboard?
It's on the keyboard.
But it's affecting the volume on the monitor?
Well, I don't
know.
So
the monitor has built-in speakers?
It's not actually changing any volume anywhere.
Does the monitor have built-in speakers?
It does not.
Because that's odd that it would be changing.
Well, it's just a green feedback thing that pops up
on
the screen.
But that's the monitor.
I know.
Normally
that's the strange thing is it's not you know, the PC. It's the monitor that's saying volume.
It sounds to me like the monitor can have speakers plugged into it, and that's what you're affecting. And since there's no speakers plugged in, it's not affecting the volume.
Okay. the thing is,
you got to understand that this is a compact. You probably bought this all together as a system, right?
Actually, no. I put the new monitor on recently, but the thing is that when I first set it up, it worked flawlessly. And so,
it
I
has
push,
worked.
Sorry?
It has worked before.
It has worked before, yeah. And so the thing is that not only would I see the volume histogram, if you will, on the monitor, but also the Windows volume control would go up and down. I could actually
right.
see the little slider going sure. up and down as I pushed these buttons.
Okay, so now the only thing is the Windows is not using that control.
Yeah.
The side effect of the monitor doing this leads me to believe that there's some IR going on here, because how else would you tell the monitor to do that?
Well, it's a USB keyboard?
No, it's PS2.
What's going on?
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to figure out what part of the OS actually handles this, you know?
I think that it's got to be some software. It's not really the monitor that's doing that.
Yeah, it's got to be some sort of
software
driver.
Painting something that looks like a monitor on there.
Yeah.
So what I don't think this is going to be an easy one to do online, but I think what you want to do is try to get the most recent drivers for your keyboard. Have you done that?
I have not.
Get the drivers for the keyboard.
That's what I would recommend doing.
That's a big thing, because
yes.
what's going on is your keyboard is going to be detected as a generic keyboard,
right.
and it might not necessarily be tying into the right
that's
software.
That's exactly right.
Uh-huh.
So you want to find your keyboard. On the back, it's going to tell you the name and everything, and go try to find the closest drivers to that. And they don't necessarily have to be exactly the same. Sometimes these keyboard manufacturers will have pictures of their keyboards, and you
right.
won't be able to find the exact one. You want to find one that at least has that button on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a compact keyboard model
sure,
5107,
sure.
but I'm sure it's OEM'd to a bazillion different people.
Right.
Certainly.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for the call.
Okay, guys.
Take care.
And hey, good job with the adaptive technology also. It's great that stuff is out there.
Thank you.
All right.
And we'll thank John, actually. And a question about the adaptive technology, or at least a comment, from Santa Cruz. Michael, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello. What's your question or comment today?
Well, you know, you opened up the segment talking about the inventor of Segway and how he was trying to bring, you know, part of his product to the mass market so he could subsidize it for his stuff.
Yeah, Michael Kamen, I think, is his name.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I was just thinking, isn't there an application here? I was thinking just as a common user of Word and Outlook, you know, word completion and word prediction might be useful to me as a slow typist, even.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that by making this product available to the mass market, you know, even just charging $5 or $10 for it, you could then subsidize the development for this, you know, very specialized.
Well, the thing with this product is it doesn't actually use the keyboard at all. So you would, it's really designed for people who cannot type. Do you want to address that a little bit, John, though?
Sure. The Sioux Center is an entire environment. It doesn't interact with other applications, but there are word prediction programs that you can get that fit into a Word and Outlook. I think Words Plus, I think, is one product that I've heard of
that does similar things.
What you have to do is just search for word prediction and see what products pop up. Yeah,
and the thing is, of course, that. When I talk about that technology, I was really talking about the hardware, because if the hardware box that John can't build by himself over a period of time, and we can't duplicate them just by copying them, if that costs $1,500, that's going to stop anybody from using it. But if it gets low enough with the mass market appeal, then John's dedication and devotion to the software, he only has to build it once, and anybody can get it. So
right.
The product is completely free. It did take time and effort, but John was willing to donate that time and effort. And we just can't do that with hardware, because hardware just has money involved. There's physical stuff. And the lucky thing about software development is copying is very easy.
Very easy to copy.
Yeah.
Are you getting grants to help you out?
No.
That sort of thing? Really?
No, not yet.
Now, John, what about you being the only person doing this and feeling kind of like, I mean, I remember when you were describing it to us, you're like, oh, I can talk to you in technical terms. I'm using a web service and I'm doing, you know, you started talking to us as geeks.
Right.
And it seems to me that if you're doing this all by yourself, anytime a feature is requested, what if someone wants to be able to play sound files that get emailed?
Right.
Anytime you
right.
have to be involved. And then all the users, to some degree, have to have an upgrade path. And are you involved with some of them? And is that a lonely process? Do you want to change the structure so that people help you? Is it possible?
Sure. It's open source. If people want to take the source and modify it and help, that'd be great.
Was he in SourceForge?
Are you on SourceForge?
Soon.
Yeah, okay, so you're planning to.
At the web.
Get all community that way.
At the website, the source is there.
Yeah.
So you're welcome to.
So right now, if you
there.
Download it and modify it, they'd email back you a patch. And as soon as that became overwhelming, you'd get more into SourceForge or Source Control.
Sure.
Sure. Well, thank you, Michael, for the call.
You're welcome.
Thank you. But go on, John, if you feel.
Yeah. There's a very small market for this software. On the website, on the front page, I say, I'm glad that very few people need this software.
Yes. Right.
Gladly. Very few people need it. Normally, in marketing literature, you want to create a sense of everybody needs this. It's wonderful. It will make you happy. Everybody's doing it.
Yes.
But this is different.
Yes.
This is different. Very few people need this.
Yeah.
But those that do need it...
Really need it.
They really need it.
Yeah.
And it will make their life better.
So, more information can be found at SiouxCenter.org. We're going to take a couple more calls. I think we'll go ahead and get someone that can answer the whole HD tuner question. Rick from Felton, welcome to GeekSpeak. Hello, Rick. Oh, I have the wrong. There you go. Hi, Rick. Sorry about that. What is your comment?
Oh, it's about the HD tuners that are actually built in to your TV set. I have a Sony Wega brand of TVs, their largest tube set.
Sure.
And they have a built-in tuner. HD tuner. When you do your scan on that and you're hooked up to your cable network, it will pull through all those free HD channels.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you get on top of that, you get the on-demand without the demand. In other words, someone else in the area could be watching shows on Friday, Saturday night, and they bring it up, and it actually comes through your TV set.
Because currently they don't have the encryption stuff going on for the HD stream.
They're going to eventually. I've heard that they will. I've talked to a cable guy about it, and he says right now there's nothing they can do about it. But it's a free thing that's out there right now.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, thank you, Michael, for the call.
Doesn't solve the computer issue.
Sorry. Thank you, Rick. Yeah, doesn't do the computer thing. But thank you, Rick, for the update on television.
But those over the line feeds are out there, and you can get them for free.
They certainly are. Well, we
over the air, I should say.
Let's go ahead and take. From Pacific Grove, Paul, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, thanks very much. I was curious if there's any support for text, reading the text, and also just voice recognition. And because I've heard, like, I think the AT&T Natural Voices has a couple of voices that are actually, you can stand to listen to them, and I wondered if that was something that could be incorporated into the Siri technology.
Yes, it's possible to use different voices.
Currently, you are using voice. I don't think we've covered that. There is voice feedback.
Yes, there's a speak button at the bottom, which you can dwell over, and it'll read the text in the message area or read the text in the browse area, so you can have books read to you. And you can change those voices and upgrade them. There's AT&T voices. There's Kepstral.com, Kepstral.
Yeah, we've heard that before. It's pretty good.
Very good. They cost like $35.
And you actually use things like when you're browsing through the images you've saved before and you want to send one to your email.
Right.
There's things like, you really want to minimize the amount of change and confusion that goes on the screen because you've got your cursor you've got to move around. So you really need your real estate. So you do this great thing of, you know, photo has been added to next email is said out loud. So there's a bit of voice.
Some text-to-speech is used here and there, yeah. Also, one of my users, Christina, is legally blind. So she can't see things very well. So she has, when a letter or a word is chosen, it's echoed with the text-to-speech.
Oh.
So she can hear it better.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul, very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
You're listening to GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more, and for more information, 423-2447.
Sunday morning on This American Life on KUSP. It takes a lifetime to build and a day to tear down. Stories about people trying to recover from damage to their reputations, sometimes caused by others, sometimes self-inflicted. On This American Life, Sunday morning, 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
The Geeks this morning, Sean Cleveland, and also Miles Elam. I'm Lyle Troxell. Our guest today was John Bjornstein, the creator and developer of Sioux Center's communication environment for people with limited movement. You can learn more information about Sioux Center at suecenter.org. John, thank you for being on GeekSpeak.
You're welcome.
And more importantly, thank you for doing the service that you're doing of dedicating 7 years of your life to helping people use communication tools better. I really appreciate
it. It's been a blast, actually.
Good. If you're interested in helping John out or learning more about the product, maybe letting someone else know about it that might need it, go to suecenter.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission.